This is Susan Strait, editor of Dimensions Magazine, and I'm here with Dr. Caitlin O'Connell Rodwell, behavioral ecologist at Stanford University and CEO of Utopia Scientific. Caitlin, your work most of the year teaching at Stanford University in the otolaryngology head and neck surgery department, and the rest of the year you're on a platform next to a watering hole deep in the wilds of Namibia's Etosha National Park. How have these vastly different environments influenced your career?
Well, that's a very good question. I think having a perspective of a very traditional academic environment versus out in the wild where your only resources are your wits and a pencil and a computer and a solar panel give me a richer understanding and appreciation for how we develop questions about the world and what patterns might be of interest, and then take those questions back to the lab and have a very intensive, sophisticated lab environment to be able to ask very difficult questions about the wild. But if you didn't have both of those worlds, you wouldn't be able to ask the kinds of questions that I'm asking about, specifically about hearing and how we can learn something about human hearing based on what is going on out there in nature with elephants.
Tell me a little bit about your work with Utopia Scientific.
Well, my husband and I started Utopia Scientific as a way of being able to get back into the field every year. You know, it's always a challenge to get grants funded every year and a consistent presence at a field site unless you have an ongoing source of support. And having Utopia Scientific has allowed us to have the flexibility to bring volunteers out into the field, bring students, even train local Namibian students. And so having the nonprofit has really helped us keep the research going on an ongoing basis. We just celebrated our 25th year studying elephants in Etosha National Park, Namibia. And keeping that study going, but also being able to do media outreach and spend some time writing about elephants in a way that I think helps broaden the audience and broaden the message about what's going on with elephants in the wild.
Based on your discoveries about elephant seismic communication and elephant ears, what are the possibilities for human hearing?
Well, there are a number of possibilities. One of the long studies that I did was on the vibrational sensitivity of the elephant's foot and trunk and how they respond to other elephant vocalizations through their feet. And this really expanded my perspective of the vibrotactile sense and what might be possible in terms of humans really focusing on the vibrotactile sense and interpreting communication using the sense of touch. And, you know, when you talk to people with hearing impairments or talk to people that run institutions for hearing impaired, the vibrotactile sense is actually very important to these people. And, you know, people talk about experiencing music through a wooden floor in bare feet. People that have normal hearing don't really pay attention to the vibrotactile sense because we have other cues that we pick up in our environment, and in this case specifically acoustic cues, where we turn our head and look at a certain stimulus, you know, whether it's crossing the road or the doorbell ringing. There's so many things that we take for granted that people with hearing impairments need assistance with. And so the vibrotactile sense is something I've been focusing on, how to help develop a better hearing aid using the vibrotactile sense, but also understanding bone conduction and how elephants process low-frequency signals using bone-conducted hearing. And there are several kinds of human bone-conducted hearing aids. So I'm now looking at the specifics of what makes an elephant ear really good at detecting or processing bone-conducted signals. And that's an ongoing study. I'm now collaborating with the Eaton Peabody Lab at Mass Eye and Ear, along with my colleagues at Stanford.
You've been studying and writing about these elephant herds at this one watering hole for 25 years. What inspiration can humans take from these creatures?
Well, I think one of the most important things is that elephants are just like us. They're very long-lived social mammals that learn from each other. Learning is very important. As an elephant grows up, there are so many different things that it has to learn from its family, and most importantly, what to eat, what's dangerous, where it's safe to go, where to find food and water. But especially the sense of family. Elephants look out for each other within their families, and in a way that is really reminds us of our humanity. It's almost like looking in the mirror.
In your book about the elephants, Elephant Secret Sense, you describe your groundbreaking discoveries of the physiology and acoustics of elephant communication. You've also published books and given TED Talks about elephant sociology, the dynamics of the matriarchs and herd members, and the male elephants who roam alone and form their own little posses. You've worked hard to communicate scientific findings into popular nonfiction, entertaining a general audience. What are some lessons you've learned as you've done this?
Well, it's interesting because I got interested in writing for popular audience after having been interviewed on a number of occasions during my seismic research, and realizing that some of the concepts were kind of difficult to get correct. And I realized if I wrote the narrative myself, the science would be conveyed correctly. And I you know, it's hard for a reporter. These were difficult geophysics concepts, and sometimes science reporters focus on certain things, astrophysics or behavioral sciences, in order to make sure they get it right. But in the time that I had a number of interviews, I realized, well, gosh, if I could convey this information myself in an engaging manner, it would be all the better, because it would be the most accurate portrayal of what's going on, but also convey the passion of my own experiences out in the wild. So I really enjoyed that, and I'm glad I had that epiphany, and I've been actually teaching other scientists how to do that as well, and really enjoying that process.
And a few years ago, you started writing fiction, and last year you published your second novel. How and why did you make this switch?
Well, I wouldn't view it as a switch. I would view it as a logical extension. After, if I look beyond the scientific journals that I've written in, I've conveyed my point to the scientific community. Well, how do I get to a broader audience? And I think about how to spin an entertaining narrative out of the nonfiction work that I've done. Well, then when I've gone beyond that audience and realized, well, sometimes, the people that pick up a nonfiction book, sometimes I feel like I'm preaching to the choir. And if I want to get even beyond that to someone that just wants a light read sitting on the beach in the summer, can I get to that audience as well? And so I got interested in writing fiction. And actually, the first book that I wrote, Ivory Ghosts, I was most interested in the characters that I was working with in Namibia and the lengths that they took, the risks that they took to stop ivory poachers and to save elephants. It was so inspiring to me that part of writing fiction, I felt, was to tell a more accurate truth. And if I had to write nonfiction, I would have had to frame things in a certain way to protect certain people. And so it was more liberating to tell the truth in that way, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And in your recent work, you've been working on creating a photography exhibition with a STEM education component. Tell us about where you are with that.
Well, this is a concept I came up with because I've been asked to teach in a lot of STEM programs, whether it's high school or college. And I did one program at college, Georgia College and State University, where I was a visiting scholar. And I developed a photography exhibition as an opening to that teaching experience, and realized that these life-size elephants, if you walk into a room with life-size elephants and I'm able to bring them alive with stories about their particular characters, I realized this is a real opportunity to just give another dimension to a STEM experience. And so my husband and I are developing a traveling exhibition of elephant photography, but also elephant biology, elephant physiology, and stories about individual elephants and how family is important and how certain characters in a family play a particular role, whether they're kind of the general or the benevolent dictator, and how character is durable and how similar elephants are to us. And this is all rolled into a package for science museums and offering STEM content to students that are interested in science.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. Wish you the best in your ongoing projects.
Well, thank you, Susan. Thanks so much for contacting me. I really appreciate it.